Okay, we're ready to resume our meeting. Mr. Briggs, item number 16.
Sorry for the technical delay there. Our apologies. We're actually going to take items 16 and 17 together. Item 16 is the City of Salinas Phase 1 MS4 status report, while item 17 is the stormwater management plan, and that's for board action on approval. And so presenting both those items today is Donette Dunaway of our staff.
Okay, thank you for that introduction. I am presenting the stormwater status report. I'll start with that. It's going to be a brief presentation to you. And as background, the City of Salinas is in their second phase of their five-year permit term. We renewed their permit in February of 2005. And we have been giving board updates periodically. This is the fourth update that you'll receive. And the reason the board has asked for several updates, quite a few updates, is because there were quite a number of large changes that the city had to undergo in the second permit term, and they've had some difficulty in meeting the timelines that were in the permit. And so the board has asked for regular updates to see the activity that the city has progressed with. So today, I will be presenting the accomplishments, the concerns, and the ongoing issues that we've seen with the City of Salinas. I'm not emphasizing strongly the annual report, and there's a reason for that. We're in an unusual situation of receiving an annual report that is reporting in primarily on the permit issues and not on the draft stormwater management plan, because the draft stormwater management plan is a draft, so it is not legally in effect. So moving on to the accomplishments. Sorry. This is a summary of the accomplishments we've seen, particularly in the last year and also year and a half. The city is implementing their draft stormwater management plan, and this is the draft that's in front of you today. This swamp has changed over the years, over the last year, but they are implementing most of the BMPs that are in that swamp. They are fully implementing their monitoring program. They have been successful in finding and eliminating illicit discharges, and they have submitted to us a preliminary stormwater development standards, and these standards include the low-impact development requirements. So the term that we'll be using is the stormwater development standards, and think LID. They have required interim LID on the construction projects that are occurring now, and they have been working with the future growth area to inform them that they will need to have low-impact development in those future growth areas. I'll give you more details here. Going into the accomplishment of abating the illicit discharges, in 2006, our CCAMP staff found that there were water quality exceedances into the Alisal Creek section, which is known as the Reclamation Ditch. We gave this information to the city, and in 2007, the city went to great efforts to locate these discharges, and they were industrial discharges, and then to have the discharges abated by the dischargers. And we have seen that there have been water quality improvements in this last year. And to keep up on this, the city is not just stopping with, we found all the dischargers and that's that. They are continuing to do inspections and educating the industries in particular so that we will keep on top of the program. Accomplishments, low-impact development requirements. Again, we've received the preliminary draft of the stormwater development standards, and we see this as a great accomplishment. We are now reviewing, Water Board staff is now reviewing the development standards, and we'll be working with the city on ensuring that those standards are include well-defined low-impact development requirements. We also see and I'll touch on that a little bit more in a minute, we also are aware that the city is requiring current low-impact development type methods on large projects, and we presented this in July. We gave you some photographs, one of which was this, and just to give you a little reminder of what they are requiring developers now of the large developments to route their runoff that comes from the paved areas and their rooftops in through what is, this will be vegetated bioswales, so that there is some filtration before that water leaves. Now, there are under drains in these bioswales, so the water is going through what will be vegetation, you don't see that here obviously, and the soil, and then it's getting a treatment before it leaves the site. So this is a treatment type system. We wouldn't consider this to be full low impact development, but it is definitely a step forward from our conventional type of development where we have just straight runoff going into the creeks.
Donette, in that photograph,
yes.
How is water getting from the
The curb cuts here?
Ah, right there. Sorry.
Yeah.
Right in my face.
Good question.
Okay.
And it's maybe, we don't think about this, but the elevation is such that the paved areas are higher than the bioswales. So it's kind of turning everything upside down so that we don't have the vegetated areas above the elevation, which is kind of our standard.
Right.
Moving on to the ongoing concerns and issues. We and the board and public are aware that there is a large future growth area which is planned for the city of Salinas, and this is located with this map in the gray areas here on the outer northern and eastern boundaries. And we understand that, and we have put forth to the city that low impact development, it will be and is required of the future growth areas as well as growth that occurs within the city. We understand that there's a concern that the future growth area development would get approved prior to the low impact development standards, the development standards being finalized and approved. And we'd like to present to the board that this does not negate the need for the future growth area to have well-defined low impact development. And the reason that we can state that is because, number one, the city's permit, and we can show you the sections of the permit, requires hydro modification, treatment, protection of the streams for erosion, and so on. So the city is bound by the permit to require low-impact development type protection. You won't find the words low-impact development in the permit. You will find, as Dominic was explaining, hydro modification requirements, protections of the streams. So if you would like, we could pop up on the screen and show you where we've got that in the permit, or we can move forward from here.
Donette, when we talk about those concepts, does it also apply to public property?
Yes. City-owned property.
City-owned property,
sure.
Too. So
yes.
If a, you know, an area that's going in, and I'm thinking about the one that's going to be annexed, if streets are going in, that a developer is going to, I assume,
release.
Build and then release to the city. Are the streets also being designed in consideration of hydro modification?
They are required to consider, yes, hydro modification. And the development standards that we are seeing and the wording that is in the stormwater management plan that you'll be looking at all addresses parking and streets and hydro mod runoff results.
Okay.
So, yes. Future growth area is covered by the low-impact development requirements. Additionally, Dominic had mentioned the general construction permit, which is coming forth. The future growth area will be subject to that. And we anticipate that there will also be 401 certification requirements, which we can condition. So there are multiple ways that we can cover this future growth area. The second ongoing concern and issue that we have discussed, actually at the last board meeting fairly in fair detail, is the public participation and input. In short, what we've heard from the public is that they feel they have not been heard, they haven't had time to review documents, they haven't had their comments taken seriously by the city. And so we realize that's an ongoing concern. And to address this, we have added in a recommended revision for the stormwater management plan. So we'll address that in the second item. About that.
And the city's objecting to be bound by a 15-day mandatory, you know, public participation review period.
It looks like it's...
In their last letter.
Yes, and after some more discussion about that with our council, 10 days is really what we believe they are held to. And
by what?
I'll let Francis answer this one, please.
Well, there's two ideas to it. One is that there's the element that requires that you have adequate public participation. And the second part is that you're required to be consistent with state law. And there's two state laws. One is the Bagley-Keene Act, which requires 10 days notice. The other is the Porter-Cologne Act, which requires 7 days notice and requires that you notice people who request to be notified. So we propose some changes to say 10 days to be the minimum that you would have to meet, and require that also requires posting on the internet, and then also noticing people who've requested to be notified.
Okay. Thank you. Ongoing concerns and issues, the stormwater development standards, again, these are the LID requirements. We are now reviewing the preliminary draft, which we received from the city, and we believe and understand and have relayed to the city in written word and also through discussion that we must have well-defined low-impact development requirements within those standards, and so we will be looking at those. We've also relayed this concern in detail in a letter released in November 15th, which you have also in your packet. We intend to bring these development standards to the board, so in a public process, July of 2008, and we are willing and prepared, if we cannot work with the city quickly enough to get a standards that we think are supportable, then we are ready to condition development standards and bring those to the board with recommended changes or revisions. So that's our plan. And the type of defined LID that we'll be covering will be pre-planning, hydro modification changes, and also water quality treatment. So quickly, in conclusion, we have seen that the city has shown progress, particularly in this last year. We've brought status reports to the board, and I believe that the board also agreed that we've seen a lot of progress. There are still some significant concerns, and we will be addressing these through recommended changes to the swamp, and also will apply the current permit requirements, for example, to the future growth area. And we will be bringing the development standards, which is the LID requirements, to the board for review and approval, and we'll deal with that issue very intently in July. So the next item that I have to present to you is a recommendation for the swamp approval, but at this moment I'd like to stop and see if you have questions or discussion before moving on.
Any board questions? Go right ahead.
Okay. This item has, let me go back a little bit, this item 17 has two supplemental sheets, one of which you received, I believe, in the mail, and that had some additional wording. There have been changes and conversations and understandings that have kind of ongoing that have brought us up to now, and we've had some changes, so you've received supplemental sheet number 2, which are changes to our original wording on some of the recommended revisions. And I'll talk you through those, but I wanted to point those out now so that you knew that they were there. And supplemental sheet number 2 really came about because of conversations that we had with the city on Wednesday. So this was last-minute understandings. They brought us new information, written information, explained some of their ordinances and general plan sections so that we understood that we needed to work the wording, rework the wording a little bit. I'd like to begin with an analogy of a stormwater management plan as this building that has columns, and this is not because we're in an election year, it's because I think this is a good representation of what we need to consider. I've found, as I listen to the board, and I found myself as I'm reviewing stormwater management plans, that it's really easy to get hung up in looking at the 100 or 150 best management practices and measurable goals and get lost in the detail and have a hard time answering, is this stormwater management plan adoptable or approvable? And so if I look at this analogy, this helps me, and I hope it helps others in the room, to see the process that we go through when we come down with the recommendation and say this is approval. The stormwater management plan is very complex. It is built off of some type of foundation. And in this case, the foundation, I would state, would be the permit requirements. So we want to look at the permit. Did the stormwater management plan address those permit requirements? And also, the city should have looked at the pollutants or the sources of pollutants as they chose their BMPs. And these could be either proven pollutants that we've seen measurable or probable pollutants that we think come off of this type of land use. So the city should be looking at these two bits of information as they choose the best management practices. And the BMPs, best management practices, would be like the bricks in this building. And there are hundreds sometimes BMPs and measurable goals to choose. And sometimes they do a better job of choosing than others. But with this many bricks, some of them could have a few cracks in them and it can still be a solid building. Now, a lot of times we will lump the BMPs into something that's understandable. In this case, we call these elements. You've also called them minimum control measures. We have, in the city of Salinas, municipal operations, development standards, elements, public education, commercial, industrial, construction, and then illicit discharge. And these blue elements, the BMPs in there, are working on minimizing or eliminating pollutants. But we also look at a swamp and say, are they doing any sort of monitoring? And, of course, do they have measurable goals, which relate to all of these elements? And those are going to look at the measures of the outcome or the effectiveness of the swamp. And finally, we'll have a section which is inspections and enforcement. Again, those will be dispersed throughout all these blue sections. And these, of course, are trying to make sure that the swamp is implemented as it should be. So we look at all of this together. It becomes very complex, but we have to come back to two questions. Number one, does the swamp meet the permit requirements? And secondly, will implementing this swamp improve water quality? And those are our final questions that we're going to ask. So now I'm going to move through this swamp that we've received and show you how I believe that it does answer these two questions satisfactorily. First, this is a section that I've copied out of the stormwater management plan, and what they've given us are tables in each of the elements. Elements, again, are those columns, and they've shown us what the permit section is that they are addressing. This is out of their permit. Here's a summary of that requirement that's in the permit, and they've matched it up with their swamp section. So by doing this, they are showing themselves and any reviewer that they have looked at the permit and are addressing the requirements of the permit. So they're starting in on that foundation and giving us the beginnings of a solid foundation. Does it meet the permit requirements? Yes, they've looked at that, and they are meeting the permit requirements. Secondly, we need to find out, have they looked at their pollutants or probable pollutants? And this, again, is a section out of their swamp. What the city did was they first looked at the 5-year permit term water sampling results they got. So this is their second permit term. They were in their first 5 years, and they did some monitoring. They found that there were no really well-identifiable trends, and we agree with this, which is why that the new permit has a completely different monitoring program. So they did look for that. They didn't find trends, so they went to the second level of logic, which is they looked at their industries, their land uses, and they also polled themselves, local knowledge, and said, what are the pollutants that we need to deal with? And they determined that chemical pesticides is a large issue, and also littering or trash is a large issue, that they needed to choose BMPs to address these issues. They didn't stop there. They also went to the permit, and in the permit, we have included the EPA's list of urban pollutants, probable urban pollutants, and we also looked at the 303 delisting type of pollutants that are in the water bodies in Salinas, and we came up with this list. So these are probable and known pollutants, and so the city worked off of that information as well to choose their BMPs. So they laid the foundation of the permit requirements, looking at the pollutants, and now we are going to be building up into the columns. And I'll be presenting to you 5 slides of, this is boiling down about 2 inches of stormwater management plan and giving you the top information of what's in there. The first column is municipal operations, and they have divided their municipal operations into parks and then non-parks. Non-parks would be all their paved areas, their streets, their maintenance yards, and any other facilities that the city runs itself. They listed in the stormwater management plan what the water quality issues are, pesticides and fertilizers for parks. That makes sense. Trash, pesticides, standard urban pollutants of concern. Coming from the non-parks, and also understanding that the non-parks, meaning the storm drain part, is a conduit to the streams. So they were very logical in this. And then they chose some BMPs that matched up, training their applicators for pesticides and fertilizers, strict standards for those applications, and actually reduced applications as well. Looking at the non-parks, they started by mapping the drain system. They scheduled drain and hotspot inspections and cleaning, street sweeping, spill response, so trying to catch up with things that they didn't intend to have released, and they also have site-specific stormwater pollution prevention plans, SWPs, for all of the maintenance yards and other facilities.
Question.
Yes.
Does the word schedule mean that you do something more than just mark it on a calendar?
Schedule and conduct, yes. Yes.
You mean schedule and complete?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Going to the next column, which is development standards, the major issues are runoff volumes and rates, that hydro modification, and then the urban pollutants, so looking at the type of pollutants that are carried in that volume. They have committed to putting together the stormwater development standards, which is the LID requirements. And this will treat hydro modification as well as water quality, as it's stated in their stormwater management plan. They are maximizing their pervious surfaces, pervious being the ones that the water can go through. This is a good thing. And they also have committed to the low-impact development treatment methods, which would be like your filtration, your biofiltration, bioswales, and so on. Construction controls, erosion and sedimentation are always your main issues. They are requiring BMPs on their construction sites. They're training their staff to understand how those BMPs need to be in place and how they need to be maintained, educating their developers on the same, and doing regular inspections, and then enforcement also falls into this category as well. Public education and outreach, they have listed their target audiences, which are shown here. I won't read through them. They have the water quality issues, which we've touched on, trash, sediment, metals, nutrients, pesticides, and fertilizers as the main issues. And their activities include reaching out to the businesses and industries. And this I put up here first on purpose because this is where really a lot of the BMPs are focusing on, because they understand in the city and now through the CCAMP data that this is very critical to educate and inform the community on what they can and cannot do and how to rid themselves of pollutants washing off their sites. They have workshops to reach not only the businesses and industries, but also the public themselves, radio for the general public, surveys, school projects to reach the young children, and storm drain stenciling, again, to educate the population. And to meet the Latino population, many of these activities are done in Spanish as well. Illicit and illegal discharge. Two issues, intentional discharges for those who want to flout the law, and accidental spills. The city has set up a reporting hotline. They do regular inspections, and this includes their storm drain system, and hotspots have a more frequent inspection program. They do wet and dry weather screening, which is well spelled out in their monitoring program, which is defined by the permit. And they have a spill response program, which is written out, and they have training on that as well. Commercial and industrial, there were a number of pollutants that were listed. I chose not to put them here, but they are shown on the swamp pages that are given to you here. So depending on the industry and the commercial business, they will be looking at different pollutants. For example, if you have restaurants, you're looking at grease quite often, that type of thing. They do regular inspections. 100% of the industrial sites are inspected each year. Can be more frequent for problem industrial sites, which the city has done. We've watched it over the last year. 20% of the high priority commercial. There are, I think it's 620 commercial sites. So they're ramping up with this program, and it's taking a lot of manpower, which is why we're looking at that 20%. They have listed required BMPs in their swamp for these industries and the in the commercial sites, and they also maintain an industrial wastewater system. And this is a little different from other cities. Most cities have a storm drain system. They'll have a sanitary drain system, and the city of Salinas also has a third system, which is the industrial wastewater sewer, which they can require their industries to hook up to if they can't eliminate the source of their pollutants.
Where does that waste go?
That goes to a facility that is treating this water. That's about as much as I can tell you.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And they can give you more detail, I know. And last, we have monitoring. The city is monitoring streams that are entering and exiting the city, and they do a comparison between the water quality at those two points, not just two points, but at entering and exiting. They have discharges that they're monitoring discharges within the city to see if they find any illicit discharges, and they are implementing other permit requiring monitoring requirements. So these are spelled out very, very well in the permit, and the city is adopting that and using that now. And finally, they have established their legal authority. They do have an escalating enforcement policy, and they are training their city staff on how to conduct enforcement, which I think some of the city staff in this room can attest to. They've had the experience of doing the enforcement. So at this point, I will move into discussing what the public comments are. But let me give you a little history of the process. We received the stormwater management plan. We reviewed this plan. We saw that there were some areas that still needed some revisions, so we put together 43 required revisions or recommended required revisions, and we posted the recommended required revisions with the swamp on our website for a 60-day public comment period. And then we received responses back. After looking through the responses, we modified and added 10 more required revisions, and that's what you see before you today, plus the supplemental sheets. So what we have here are public comments that we received from these agencies. You'll see the city of Salinas is at the bottom. They were not commenting on their swamp. They were commenting on the required revisions. Something else I need to tell you. The supplemental sheet. I've already mentioned that. Anything else? What I'm getting into right now is we've had some quick changes over the last week, and so I'm going to try and capture those as I'm speaking to you, and I may hear people jumping in here and there if I've forgotten pieces. City comments. Okay, the city commented in on the required revisions. We agree on most of the 53 required revisions now. There were some outstanding issues which we have worked over now, and these were with public participation and stream setbacks requirements, which include the reclamation ditch. We had included a required revision looking at a 30-day comment period, and the city responded that they would attempt to meet a 30-day goal, but they did not believe it was appropriate. And this was in their letter, their first letter, not appropriate to include a BMP for public participation. They stated that there was not a minimum that was required by law or by the city's permit. And they noted that the public can comment at any time on ordinances or standards or the general plan or anything else. So they didn't believe that this was necessary. We've responded that the public has raised the issue of public participation, particularly over the last year at board meetings and also in written comment. We heard particularly from NRDC and Coastkeeper on the issue. And we also were a little dismayed to learn there was a city stakeholder group that was put together as the city was developing their stormwater development standards. And we had heard from stakeholders kind of throughout the process and afterwards that they didn't believe that they had had time to review the documents the city had prepared for them and were not sure that their words had been heard. So we believe it's an ongoing concern.
I'm a little surprised to hear that because what's the first minimum control measure? What's the heading for that? Public outreach.
Mm.
I mean, it's got to go both ways.
you're out reaching to the public, and you got to get feedback from the public. So there's got to be adequate time to ensure that that's going to take place.
That's been the concern. And so, to address this, we put together Resolution 2AAA, and there's been modifications to this as well, so I should direct you at this point to the supplemental sheet number 2, which is our recommended wording. And in summary, on this resolution, we are requiring a 30-day public notice goal, so the city would have that goal of 30 days, but a minimum, and this slide is wrong, not 15 days, but 10 days, review and comment period, which Francis addressed for us. We also have the city must show how their comments that they received were considered, and we had a measurable goal that included some satisfaction criteria. We've reworded that and reworked it, so now the measurable goal would be that the city would be submitting the public notice information to us and also their public comment responses. So we would have actual tangible evidence of what they're getting to the public, when they're getting it to the public, and how they are responding to the public.
And this is for the annual reporting.
This would be more than just the annual report. For example, if they were passing an ordinance,
okay,
anything that right. goes in front of their city council.
Okay.
So that level. So we're ordinances, standards, right. changes to the swamp.
And the annual report.
I didn't include the annual report in there.
That doesn't go to the city council. This is for city council meetings.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my comment had to do with the annual report to make sure that the public had enough time, you know, as part of public outreach in that respect to review it and comment on it.
Okay.
So there's no requirement that there be a minimum amount of time for that?
Not that we have included, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe it's in the swamp to have annual report review. No. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. The second subject which we heard, yes?
Isn't it supposed to be posted?
Posting the annual report? No. It's, no.
Really?
We have... The board has asked us to post them.
No, I mean the stormwater entities, the city. I thought they're supposed to post.
If I may, just the city does post the annual report on its website,
mm-hmm.
so it is available. The most recent one that we've done is posted on the website, so the public has an opportunity to go on there and view that.
Well, that's good. I was thinking it was required by the program.
Well,
no.
Well, what do you suggest be done so that it is a requirement?
Well, we could certainly require that going forward. I was under the impression that we already had that as part of the program requirement.
No.
What I would suggest is that you have it that upon receipt of it, that the regional board provides an opportunity to comment on it, not
the entity?
Correct.
Why wouldn't they post it?
Well, they should post it, but to create another comment period
okay.
is probably more appropriate by us because we're the ones that then review it and tell them if it's good enough or not.
Mm-hmm. And so we had this issue with Santa Barbara, you know, where there was a difference of opinion as to how much time was really allotted and the fact that the county itself didn't reply at all to the comments.
What was the difference there with Santa Barbara?
In terms of
there's
what?
There's a requirement for public participation, but it doesn't explicitly say that they have to provide for a public comment period.
Huh. Okay.
Monterey chose to. That may be what you're remembering.
Okay.
And there was a large discussion on that at the time.
All right.
But Santa Barbara also said they do it voluntarily.
Yes.
So they noted that they're not required, but they do it as on a voluntary
right.
basis.
Mm-hmm.
All right. On to Reclamation Ditch. The Reclamation Ditch, again, is a segment of Owlsaw Creek, although I guess I should get into that secondly. The city and the Monterey County Water Resources Agency commented that the reclamation ditch is included in the stormwater management plan as a just through discussion of what are the water bodies that are within the city. And the city and the Monterey Water Agency noted that this is a man-made feature. It's not subject to any creek protection. And the, what this boils down to is the Monterey Water Agency owns and operates the reclamation ditch where it goes through the city of Salinas and I suppose on down past that. And they are concerned, particularly in the creek setback requirements, that this would impede their ability to get into the reclamation ditch and do their flood maintenance activities, which include vegetation removal and dredging. So that's where the concern is coming in. Waterboard staff, NOAA, and the Coast Keeper maintain that the rec ditch is part of the Alisaw Creek, so it's a creek segment. It's part of an overall system that flows to the Monterey Bay. Therefore, creek protection principles do apply in the reclamation ditch. And we had pointed out that as far as looking at flooding, we believe that the city and the agency should look towards low-impact development to reduce the source of water that's going into the creek before jumping to other measures. We'd also like to point out the resolution items that we have included are dealing with the setbacks, not with what's occurring within the creek itself. So we're looking at the banks of the creek or the reclamation ditch and the setbacks on those. So this is a little bit of a side issue, but it's also something that is very important, and we've heard a lot of comment about it. And this is a map to give you a picture of where we're talking. Alisaw Creek comes into the city here, and then it winds through the city, although it's been straightened, dredged, and made into basically a channel through the city, and it's called the Reclamation Canal, or that's how it's termed. And then it flows down again and eventually meets up with the ocean. Resolution 2I has also changed. So again, I will point you towards the supplemental sheet number 2. The city... Did I skip something? Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped ahead. Never mind. Resolution 2I, we proposed, would provide a 30-foot setback. The city responded that they have a general plan policy, COS 17, which requires a 100-foot setback. Therefore, that's sufficient, and we didn't need to put in Resolution 2I. It would be confusing. We looked at Resolution 2I, or COS 17, and despite what the words say on here, we understand now that it's more accurate to say that COS 17 does provide a 100-foot setback, but it has exceptions that are listed within it. And the exceptions are these. For lands that are within the city boundary, so not the future growth area, lands that are within the city boundary, if there are alternative mitigation measures that would provide the same protection, then somebody can not do the setback, the 100-foot setback, and do the alternative mitigation instead. However, if the property abuts the reclamation ditch, then the applicant would have to show through a biotic resources study that there is no riparian vegetation in that area, and then they would be able to bypass the setback. So our concern is that our basin plan requires a 30-foot setback whenever possible. And these exceptions would be would limit that. So they are not required to do 30-foot setback whenever possible. So we think that this is COS 17 in some instances is less stringent than our basin plan.
Well, question for you. Are you saying that they can go below 30 feet?
Yes.
If they...
In those situations.
Well, is it just with the reclamation ditch or is it with... everything other than the reclamation ditch?
With the reclamation ditch, if there's no riparian resources, and in other streams within the city boundaries, if alternative mitigation measures would provide equivalent
What mitigation protection. Measures could ever take the place of riparian habitat?
Well, we asked the city this, and would you like to go ahead in your own words?
Well...
Okay. What we learned is that they did have a one of these situations, I believe this year, where the applicant decided to go in and revegetate the area that would be the riparian corridor. However, as I understand it, the building site itself would be the building site. So they would have revegetated around, but they'd have the building sites here sitting up maybe at the edge of the creek.
How is that mitigation?
Well, if you have barren land, then there's now some new vegetation, but you also have a building.
I think, if I may, this is Dominic, the circumstances is one in which a biological assessment has determined that the resources extent on that parcel aren't significant. And so the determination to allow a use there is made conditioned upon restoration of that site outside of the building footprint. Is that accurate, Chris?
That's correct. And it requires a biological resources study to be completed prior to the consideration of any sort of development within that setback area. And the person completing that study must be a licensed biologist who understands, you know, the sensitive nature of these areas in which we may potentially be encroaching into that setback area.
Seth, my comment?
I don't think so.
Is the green light on?
It was, yes.
There you go.
Yeah.
You want the green light on?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Can I just explain something? This provision that Donette is talking about is part of the general plan of the city. And what our concern was the exceptions could be construed to be inconsistent with the basin plan, which requires at a minimum 30-foot setback whenever possible. So what we propose to do is have the BMP, say, comply with their general plan, which is generally 100-foot setback, though, so that's better. But if it's within 30 feet, they have to comply with the basin plan, so they have to maintain a 30-foot setback or have a 30-foot setback whenever possible. So that would mean to me that they would be applying their exception consistent with our basin plan. Our basin plan doesn't have any explanation of what whenever possible means, so this would be one way to look at that. But, you know, at this point, their general plan says what it says, and our basin plan says what it says, so we're trying to have something that would implement both so that they need to look at what, whenever possible, that they maintain the 30-foot. But they would go even, most of the time, they'd have 100-foot, which is better than our basin plan. So,
go ahead, Dr. Press.
Well, yes, there might be an extraordinary situation where you have barren land. Your biological assessment says that there's nothing there. Your building, your development will result in some restoration and replanting, but a building also abutting the ditch creek. From a water quality perspective, the best result is that the building still is set back from the creek and you get revegetation. I mean, if you want to talk because you're still going to have extra impervious surface in that zone that used to be bare. So if the principle is to make sure that you're getting more vegetation, that you're retaining stormwater on site, then in those extraordinary situations, you probably want to still keep that building back and get some vegetation in there. I mean, if it's really exceptional, then and extraordinary, then I don't see that it's going to come up very often, and maybe you can live with that setback being hard and fast.
And which minimum control measures is part of?
Best management practices? Is that?
No. Which one of the six pillars does this fall?
Development standards.
Development standards, okay. But that's not one of the six, is it?
Phase one.
Which one?
Right. This is phase one, so it's not.
Right.
It doesn't match perfectly.
It doesn't match.
It's real close,
phase
but it doesn't
two
match
we've been looking at. Okay.
Right.
And so would this then get reported? I mean, if they were to do something with?
Yes.
Okay.
So the wording in the supplemental sheet number 2 that you have, I believe, matches what Dr. Press and Jeff Young have stated, where we would be requiring the 30-foot setback to meet the basin plan requirements whenever possible, and this would be a filtration strip. That's what the basin plan is looking for. This would include the reclamation ditch or the bordering properties of the reclamation ditch, because we're talking about setbacks. So not within the ditch, but the bordering properties, setbacks. We would still, of course, allow the city to have the general plan COS 17. Setback is defined as no clearing, compaction, excavation, building, or vegetation removal, and there is a measurable goal which is written in there. So what we've done is we've actually written the BMP, the implementation plan, the timing, and the measurable goal, and that's for you in supplemental sheet number 2. The measurable goal is that the city would be reporting to Water Board staff prior to these exceptions being approved.
Do you have number 2?
Yes.
Can we put up on Elmo?
I'm not sure everybody got the...
We can share.
All right.
That's
great.
No?
Not at
that. We'll put that up here.
At the top here.
That's the best thing to do.
Supplemental sheet number 2.
What? Okay. I don't seem to have it.
We'll be sharing.
I've got it.
It was hiding.
I'm sorry.
It was hiding.
Too many yellow pages floating around. I've got it.
Yes.
Okay. What?
It's the same one you're
reading. There we go. And there's a zoom on there.
After the 2 copies of the letter.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that got confused.
And I read their first copy of the letter.
Probably even
this
a little more.
This is the second.
Yeah.
Okay. Where are we?
Right here.
Which page?
Right here, page 2.
Okay.
At the very bottom.
Good. I'm with you.
And she's got it up there.
Right there.
So underlined for you up there, the 30-foot setback whenever possible is the measurable goal. Reported to the Water Board is also part of the measurable goal.
And there is one change that I would recommend, which is...
Oh, thank you.
Right above where it says year 3, there's a paragraph that references conditional use permits, but not all...
Right.
Activities that might come out under here are subject to a conditional use permit, so I would just change that to city approval process.
Which
the paragraph right above where it says year 3.
Exceptions to the 30.
Right.
Okay, to 34.
Right there.
Yeah. Thank you.
See there, Jeff?
Yep. No, I got it.
That word processor looks a lot like a hand, doesn't it? It's amazing what they can do with software now.
I don't get this. This seems... Do you really want the word inconsistent there or consistent? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Well, that's the exception. And the reason for that is, say there's a state fire code or something, you wouldn't have to go seek an exception to meet the fire code.
Right, okay.
I suppose I should feel compelled to say that we released this yesterday, I think. The city has only just seen it since yesterday, so I haven't had time to correspond with the city to know if they have comments as well. Just noting that right now. We're good to move on?
Yep.
Okay. All right, so that's the new wording of Resolution 2I, Supplemental Sheet 2. The next section that we heard a lot of comments were on the low-impact development LID requirements. Particularly, we heard comments, written comments from NRDC and Coastkeeper. And to summarize, the two parties believe that the swamp does not define LID requirements, and they also found that cross-referencing was confusing because there are a lot of mentions of where low-impact development requirements are within the swamp. And to answer this, I think I'll go ahead and have them post a section of the swamp up here. The swamp, please. We agree that the stormwater development standards are not within the swamp. It's not included in there. It will be coming to the board in July. However, the stormwater management plan does say very explicitly what will be in the stormwater development standards. And that's what I'll have posted up here by Dominic in just a minute. So we believe that we really do understand what's going to be in here. And furthermore, the stormwater development standards have to match with the permit requirements, which have hydro modification, treatment, and so on. So we feel like we know where the city is going. And so here Dominic is putting up a section of the stormwater development standards requirements, which is hard to find. And as he's putting that up, the swamp also has a BMP which establishes the city's authority to require the stormwater development standards. They've already put this in place with their stormwater ordinance. And so they have it laid out as to how they will be requiring these and when these will be required. So what I'm looking for is the... Keep going down. Section L. I want the section L. That's 424. Thanks. Actually, what he just had up there shows the priority projects which are required to have stormwater development standards applied to them, and these priority projects are listed in the swamp. Essentially, they include, if we could take it down to its baseline, everything that has 5,000 square feet or more of perviousness added to or changed on the site. Okay, thank you. Perfect. So this is the stormwater management plan, and they have included the required development or post-construction BMPs. And so this, they're going to list what they are doing, minimizing impervious area, and then if we can get them to scroll down a little bit. Thank you. Okay, so keep scrolling down if you would, please. So minimizing impervious area, that's the first thing we want. Keep on going down, please. Maximizing rainfall interception, minimizing directly connected impervious areas. Keep going. It goes to another page. That's hard to do. This is difficult to do. We also have a hard copy. What I want to present to you is that they have the sections of included which point to LID as we define it. Yes.
And so your firm conviction
yes
is that that as of this instant, or rather as of the adoption of this revised swamp, that new development would meet those performance standards that are outlined in the swamp, and that will later be further defined in the development standards. But there's, from the board's perspective, there needs to be no chance that that large development is going to sneak in
right.
without meeting the best performance standards possible, and not get kind of grandfathered in.
Right, I understand.
So what's your firm conviction?
Well, I'll tell you this. The way that the swamp is written, the BMPs say that the city will develop the stormwater development standards. Water board staff will review it. This is part of the permits requirements, and we approve it. And then the city will take the stormwater development standards to their city council, have those adopted, and then they are in place at that time. So there is a delay in there because we aren't intending, we don't think we can bring this to you until July. So the question is, will they sneak something in between now and July, or between now and, if we approve it, July, when they get this to their city council? And if so, then that's trouble. However, we have our permit that we have enforcement capability on the city. So we have the ability now, which we need to exercise as we need to with the storm, the future growth area in particular, to require hydro modification and LID. So we can cover it, and it is covered. Ooh. And it's better covered once we get this.
Okay. Well, where are they with that plan development?
We have the preliminary draft, which we received December 31st.
The proposed annexation, and with the 12,000.
Yes.
Yeah, 12,000 homes. So where is that? And is it only in design phase?
It's in its preliminary design, okay. And I'll give my answer, and I'll let you add in, please. But yeah. They still need to go to the LAFCO, which is okay. LAFCO, for annexation. And then they have to go through the CEQA, EIR process, and then they can move
okay.
from there.
So my question for you then is, has the LID concepts already been injected into this development?
Yeah, and the green light is on. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yes.
Okay. The land isn't even within the city's boundaries yet.
Right.
The annexation application was submitted to LAFCO on December 31st of 2007. They won't be taking this issue up until about the late part of February or early part of March. So the property isn't even ours yet. And all it does once it's approved is move the city's jurisdictional boundaries, because those lands are currently within the county.
Right.
So it's just a matter of bringing them within the city, and that's it. It doesn't entitle anyone to go in and develop anything at all. All it does is just bring it within the city.
Mm.
And within the general plan SEIR, which is the environmental document that was prepared to support that LAFCO application, LID is incorporated in there. In the mitigation and monitoring program, so it is in there to address your question.
Okay. So I guess then we're really just looking at the city getting jurisdiction over the land before it considers any
exactly.
application to develop
exactly.
the land.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. I got it.
And I should apologize. I should introduce, this is Chris Callahan, who is the city's deputy attorney.
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
Sorry, I should have introduced myself. Chris
wow.
Callahan, the senior
okay.
deputy city attorney for the city.
Senior, sorry.
And let me just, while I'm on the future growth area, I have, you know, part of it in my presentation, but with regards to the specific developments, right. there will also be environmental impact reports prepared for each of the specific planning areas, and there are three. There's an east, a central, and a west. So when the specific plans are prepared by the development interests and the development groups for each of those specific plan areas, there will be another environmental impact report prepared. So there'll be three. And the stormwater, hydro modification, global climate change, all of that will have to be addressed in those EIRs also. So any concern about public process or public involvement, public knowledge about what's going on with regards to those developments, there will be plenty of opportunity for that, which is required under CEQA. The city won't have any control over that. It's a minimum 45-day public review period for those. Of course, your staff will have the opportunity to comment on those EIRs as any member of the public would.
Yeah, and that's encouraging, because you can understand that when we got these materials and saw that the development standards were coming but not in this action, it raised the question of whether the development standards, the very best development standards possible, would be active and governing at the time when very large development was going to happen. So we didn't want to risk something being grandfathered in, and so this is encouraging. And we know how long LAFCOs and EIRs take. So
go ahead. Is the city in the process of changing the ordinance to implement this as well, or are they going to wait till after this is all done and then change the ordinances? And what is your timeline for ordinances?
The city's stormwater ordinance was actually amended and approved by the city council in 2007, July of 2007. and we incorporated comments and required revisions that Lori Okun actually suggested to us in order to accomplish LID and to require LID. So even though we don't have the stormwater development standards in place, Board Member Jeffries, we do have the stormwater ordinance in place, which requires LID and gives us the enforcement mechanisms available in case someone doesn't implement them or isn't properly managing them. And maintenance agreements is one of those enforcement mechanisms.
Okay.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Could I ask a question? This is more for the city, I think. Staff could jump into. I wonder how you decide how you are going to develop a project. We saw the area, the future growth area, and it's so many acres, and I've heard numbers for houses, and I've heard 12,000, 15,000, at some point I even heard 18,000. And I wonder if how you go about deciding the number of houses and how these hydro modification controls and low impact development standards that we are talking about fit in. Because there's one approach you could take is that we're going to annex this area and we're going to build 15,000 homes. And therefore, we can only use a certain number of or a certain type of LID management practices or design standards. Another approach would be, here are the design standards we're going to use, and here are the hydro modification controls we're going to comply with. Therefore, here's the number of houses we can build. So which comes first?
Well, let me address the issue with regard to the number of units and such like that, and then I'm going to defer to Carl Nisawa, our deputy city engineer, and the other things. Part of the application that was submitted to LAFCO includes a pre-zoning of this entire area. And the entire area, through that application, will be pre-zoned as new urbanism, which incorporates through our general plan smart growth policies, the trend towards compact development, walkable communities and such like that, the incorporation of LID features through that model, which we understand has been heralded by EPA as a best management practice in order to protect stormwater quality. So I don't know if that answers your question. I think it starts to answer your question. But for the rest of this, I'm going to defer to Carl Nisawa, who's closer to the engineering on this issue.
Yeah, I don't have the proper documents here, but our stormwater management plan goes into great detail to explain the approach with regards to the general plan, which provides guidelines for the future growth area. As many of you know, the EPA advocates a smart growth planning, and we follow that in terms of the densities. We're talking about average nine per acre. We are in there in it. And the impact that the EPA shows is that with those types of densities, you actually have less stormwater impact. In fact, they recently had a November seminar on exactly that principle.
Could you expand on that?
Could you expand on that a little bit?
On smart growth?
Well, on the
densities?
Yeah.
9 units per acre.
Yeah.
Yeah. The concepts provided by EPA are such that if you look at three alternative developments, one resident per acre, another four per acre, another eight per acre, on a per resident basis, the impact on stormwater is that the higher densities provide less impact to stormwater.
But what are the assumptions in there? Because if you're building out to, in order to accommodate the eight units, if you're building out to the envelope of the acre,
no, it's higher densities basically restrict the amount of acreage that's being impacted.
I understand that, right. but the question is, how much? What's the impact on pervious surface and impervious? The ratio of impervious to pervious surface.
What's the ratio?
What's the impact
per resident or per the acre being developed?
For that acre being developed.
For the acre being developed, there would be obviously more impervious surface
that's
per acre. But I'd be happy, Dr. Press, to provide you this whole theory with regard to smart process, smart growth, and new urbanisms, which also is a global climate change mitigation.
You don't have to convince me that, higher density has many benefits to it.
Right.
My only concern is that yes, you could have a smaller overall footprint.
Right.
But my question is, within that smaller footprint,
yes,
how are you going to capture stormwater on site and retain it on site? It's going to be more difficult if you have more pervious surface within that.
Yeah, yes, you're sure right. LID is there was a supplemental EIR given out, and I'm so surprised. I mean, I'm sorry I don't have it here with me, but it basically says that LID is going to be incorporated in the future growth area. So let me assure you, and I'm going to give a presentation on our current development standards, and let me assure that not only will the future growth area, but we currently meet our permit requirements in regards to our development. And I want to try to straighten what I think is a mischaracterization of our program.
Okay, I'm looking for. I'm thinking of the street, and I'm thinking of the homes on the street, and I'm looking at it from bird's eye, and I'm thinking, okay, if there's not much pervious surface around the actual structure, where's that water going to go? Well, it might be that you've got more retention in the yard sidewalk area, in the common area, that is going to be capturing what otherwise might have been on the in that 1 acre. You see what I'm? Do you follow me?
Yes, I understand what you're saying. Even though the densities are higher, you actually have more green space for stormwater mitigation.
If you so choose to go that way,
yes.
If you turn the common, basically the street and the common area that into that way, sure. So I'm just wondering if that's the the underlying principle here.
Yes, it is. It is.
All right.
And it's we addressed it in our comments actually, when this subject came up. In fact, we sent a letter to the Water Board in response to questions on the city's future growth area. Let me assure you, Dr. Press, that your staff has been very vigilant with regards to the city's future growth area issues.
No, I know. I'm just saying that sometimes it's helpful to think about this, to think visually and spatially about it, because this is an abstraction, really. There's this big development that's happening. Right now, it's just a big, polygon on a map, but when you think about a street and about densities, it's helpful to think about how and people correctly say LID means different things to different places. So I'm just trying to understand how this kind of
and I'd be very happy to supply you and the rest of the board and staff with a more detailed description of our smart growth planning in the future growth area and in the city, and how environmentally friendly that process is.
Great.
How about this? How about when you get to that point with this new plan development, that we do get some kind of a status report?
That's fine.
That you can show the board, LID, what the city considers to be LID and how it's proposed to be utilized in the real place, and then that would be great. Yeah,
and also explain to us how you're going to keep it there.
I mean, how it's going to be maintained,
Yes.
Well, that maintaining and keeping it is two different things.
Yeah.
Because property owners have a tendency to make changes. And don't tell me you're going to do it with CC&Rs, because CC&Rs don't work. You're going to have some other kind of process that to enforce the property owner to keep the type of landscaping or whatever pervious materials that they have to take that stormwater runoff on prem, because they have a tendency to put more concrete in, they have a tendency to pull out landscaping, they have a tendency to do a lot of things after they're in the house. So. And again, don't come and tell me CC&Rs are going to be the way to go, because that doesn't work.
And if I may, the city has committed in their stormwater management plan to including those maintenance requirements in their stormwater development standards. So we'll expect to see those in the standards that will be in front of the board in July.
Right.
So
I'll be looking.
Yeah, we'll pick those up. And I also wanted to point out this is a section from the Stormwater Management Plan as well. And again, we intend to hold the city to their words, but what they are stating that they will do is they will require their applicants to look at the pre and post pollutant loads and also to look at hydromodification effects and then and address those to the MEP. So they have stated that they will do that here. And then they go on to talk more about this, looking at their site features and detaining stormwater, slowing water, controlling the pollutants, looking at the impervious surfaces, and so on. So they've included this in the stormwater management plan. They're stating they're going to do it. It's going to be in the stormwater development standards, and we intend to hold those to them. In addition, we have committed, as Dominic had stated to you, that we will provide the city with what are the guidelines of what we think LID is and what we're looking for. What are the requirements that we expect to see in there? So it's a two-way street, two-way communication.
One quick question. What are CCNRs or MIs?
CCNRs? Codes, covenants, and restrictions. They're like placed on homeowners,
right.
But they can expire after so many years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or just not be implemented.
Or not be enforced.
Right, or not be enforced.
They're not enforced. That's right. The problem.
Yeah. If I may, the CCNRs, while they may not be the ideal, they do run with the land and they continue on through subsequent land owners. And to sort of address that issue, the maintenance agreements that we have in place that are required under our ordinance are required now. And they have exhibits that are attached which require when these certain LID features are installed that the property owners maintain them according to those criteria that are established. If they don't, the city has the authority to go in, correct them if they need to do the maintenance that we need to, and then we can pass those costs on. So we have those maintenance agreements in place, in effect. We require them of all LID projects in the city currently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Actually, it is stated in there. I didn't get that far, did I? Maintenance, treatment controls, and other BMPs in perpetuity, so they are addressing that as well.
Well, I don't want to belabor this issue. But, you know, you're going to come back 5 years from now and tell us that you don't have enough money to, staff-wise, to go around and monitor these type of changes. So, you know, we have to have something better in place. And also, homeowners associations don't work either. So we need something better to be able to mandate and keep these projects the way they've been designed. And I'm sure that there's going to be engineering done on soil samples and so forth on percolation, because some of that area is being considered as a hard pan and is not going to percolate any place.
You know, I wonder if, because this is going to be a requirement of the swamp, that there be, I mean, which is going to be in perpetuity.
Right.
Well, okay.
The swamp's there.
Yeah. That there be some reporting requirement where they're affirming that they have done field inspections.
Well, on the other hand, Mr. Chair, you know, I don't want to burden the city either, because I realize this could be a very costly situation.
But that's what you're proposing. In some way, it's a burden.
I'm hoping that that they put their heads together and come up with some kind of solution that will resolve the issue.
Right.
And I'm sure there's an answer out there. There's some very intelligent people in the city of Salinas that can handle those type of things.
Just as a side note, if I could add one thing, the issue of management agreements and preserving these arrangements in perpetuity to maintain these facilities is very much a hot topic around the state as we talk about these phase two and these stormwater regs. One of the things about low impact development, which holds promise, is that it reduces your maintenance cost over time and overall. And so one potential advantage of moving toward LID is that the long term operation and maintenance burden on the city actually goes down. So it seems as though there's a reason to be hopeful.
Well,
that
I would agree with you if everything stayed the way it was originally designed and installed.
Right.
I'm concerned about 10 years from after the project's completed and homeowners change.
Yeah.
That things become, you know,
forgotten. And the new homeowner decides to pour concrete in and get that gravel out. Yeah.
Or they put multiple storage sheds. And it just goes on and on and on. And that's one of the concerns I have. And I'll admit I was part of the problem, but because when I was mayor, we approved a couple projects. And if I had known what I know today, at that particular time, some of those projects would have been designed a little bit different for stormwater runoffs, and that would have relieved the city of Salinas of some of their flooding that they have today. And I hope that they will look at that, especially those creeks that come, the Santa Rita Creek, the Alisal Creek, the Gavilan Creek. Those are very important creeks. It's not only what happens when it comes to the city, but what happens when it leaves the city. And it winds up, as people have said, in Monterey Bay, but it also winds up in Moss Landing Harbor. And that's a very small entity that has to handle a lot of stormwater discharge and sediment control that should have been handled further upstream by the city of Salinas and others. So just to put you on notice, I'm going to be looking at that. What are you going to do about that? And don't say it's all Monterey County Water Resources Flood Control District's responsibility, because it's not.
Okay.
Dr. Press took a lot of other comments already. So.
And if I may, I'd like to just bring up this point. And I know this won't be the panacea, but I have read a very interesting study, and I cannot quote it right now, talking about this very issue of maintenance of these BMPs and how they tend to go away and people forget about them and so on. And the conclusion on that study, after looking at the history of some of these LID BMPs, is that what seems to work as well as anything else, if not better, is educating people on why they need that bioswale, so that it's in their heads and not on the piece of paper that's filed with the county clerk. Which I know people say, education, you know, how effective is that? But in this case, apparently, it is fairly effective. Just like our education on trash back in the 70s, you know, people have to change their ways and they have to know why they need to change their ways.
Well, how do you educate the second homeowner that comes in 10 years later?
It's got to be a global, within the city, global education on what are these things that the city's putting in? What are these bioswale things? Why are they important? Why do we care? You know, City of Seattle has grabbed onto this, and now the people in that city understand what this is, and they want it. They want it. So it's a change of the mindset.
I would comment that Don't Be a Litter Bug campaign was probably one of the phenomenal examples.
It was.
I know that's what you're referring to,
sure.
But that's what everybody knows. It's Don't Be a Litter Bug,
right.
And it worked.
Right.
It changed the way we see things. And now people accept a $2,000 fine for littering.
Right.
And that happens once in a while, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I would just offer that we shouldn't forget that education could be a player in this. Yes, I understand. Okay, so those are the main issues that I chose to present on the public comments. There certainly were more public comments. We've covered this in Attachment 2 in depth. Gosh, I don't recall how many pages, but 10 at least, I think, in depth on responding to their public comments. So those aren't all the issues, but I think those were the main ones. We have put together some recommended required modifications, and we have 53 required modifications or recommended modifications, but sounds like just an inordinate amount until you consider that the swamp has about 130 BMPs and about 150 measurable goals. So altogether we're talking 280 items. And so we're commenting on 53 of those, and the bulk of those, you didn't know I could do that, did you? Okay, the bulk of those we see as being not as significant, typographic, clarifications, and so on. The more significant are the two that we touched on, public participation. 2% represents one change, one modification. Stream protection, we have two modifications, one of which we just touched on very strongly. Then we have 11, which represents nine changes that are for modifications to tract effectiveness, and I'll give you an example in just a minute. And more specific descriptions, there are, what did I say? I said six here and nine here. So out of 280 items, this isn't bad. This isn't bad. So the type of changes that we're looking for, B and P modifications to track effectiveness. The resolution items are listed here, but I'll give you an example of number 2B. Number 2B was the city has a BMP that says that they will do public surveys, and we asked them to make a little modification to this to say that they will use the public survey information to modify or change their stormwater management plan. So just taking what they've already given us and saying you could go a half a step further and have something that's a lot more effective. That's the type of change we're looking at. And more specific descriptions on 2V, the city has a BMP for using mulch, and they were going to apply it, I believe, at 3 inches. We've asked for them to give us something a little more descriptive of how often they will be using mulch in that area. So a little more specific, will it be in one tree well, or will it be in all of the tree wells, for example? Something along those lines. So summarizing and finishing up here, going back to our analogy, we've got the stormwater management plan. You're looking at 280 items, 280 bricks within it, some of which may not be as strong as others, but overall it looks like a strong plan. Why? Well, because they've started with a good foundation of the permit requirements and looking at the pollutants. They've chosen their BMPs based on that information. They have addressed all the sections in their permit, which are shown here, and they are addressing the minimizing or eliminating the pollutants. And they'll be looking at the measurements of the outcome. They have a strong monitoring program, which is young yet. There's 7 data points at this point, but they have already started looking at the effectiveness and trying to discern what that monitoring information is giving to them. So we feel that they have given us enough detail in these sections to understand what the city is doing and will be doing. And we are lucky in this situation in that the city has already started implementing their stormwater management plan. Even though it's a draft, they've already implemented it. And we have already seen that there's water quality improvements in this last year, significant water quality improvements. So to answer this question, will implementing the swamp improve water quality? We can say yes, based on the fact that it already has. And do they meet the permit requirements? Yes, we believe that they do. They've shown us in black and white where they've addressed this. Therefore, we believe that the stormwater management plan is worthy of approval.
Do we know, Donette, what BMPs actually resulted in the water quality improvements?
Yes. It'll be several of them. The inspection program, the industrial inspection program, the outreach program, education, so we're touching on education, inspection, and enforcement as well. Basically what they did is they found out that there was water quality issues. They went and actually in mapping also, BMP, they went out, mapped the storm drain system to figure out what was discharging, went up the pipe, found the dischargers, addressed the problems, had the dischargers reduce the issues, and So, yes, and it would cover about 4 BMPs in different areas, education, enforcement, and yes.
How is the industrial water treated?
Let me hand that to you, if I could.
Denise, you want to?
Okay, this is Ron Cole from the city.
Yes, my name is Ron Cole. I'm wastewater manager for the city. The industrial waste facility, we have a 200-acre pond system. We have a third, as Donette said earlier, it's a third piping system beyond the storm drain system and the sanitary sewer. It is basically in our industrial area, and it takes processed water from 23 industries to our facility for treatment. It is then pumped. Once it arrives at the facility, it's pumped to an aeration pond, and it goes to a 12-acre aeration pond where it's aerated. Dissolved oxygen is brought up, and then it is distributed to a larger pond system. I'm sorry, a little nervous.
That's okay.
But
I was more interested, do you have a treatment facilities other than the ponds?
No.
I thought maybe the city added something new that I wasn't aware of.
No, the pond system is under a WDR overseen by the Regional Water Board. We have our own water quality analysis that has to be completed for discharge and requirements under that WDR. But it goes to clarifying ponds and then to distribution beds for percolation and evaporation.
I'm familiar with all that. I thought there was an intermediate treatment facilities that was put in.
No.
I knew about the pipeline, I knew about the ponds, and I knew about the aeration.
Mm-hmm.
And I know about the companies that participate to the industrial facilities.
The industrial facility, for general information, it does take in approximately, on average, 2.2 million gallons of industrial wastewater, processed water, on a monthly basis. Throughout the year, we do have peak months where those flows are higher, and then in the winter months, it's basically about 1 million gallons a month. But the throughput is approximately 2.2 million gallons a month.
Is that considerably less than what it was 10 years ago?
You know, as industries come and go out of the facility, we did lose some big industries approximately 10 years ago that left the city of Salinas. But in the interim, we have added facilities. Some of the industries that are there now are upping their processing, are putting through more. So it's virtually about the same as where we were 10 years ago at this point. But we are anticipating increased flows from further development expansion from companies like Fresh Express and so on.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That concludes my talk.
Okay. Any other board?
Oh. Recommendations. I recommend, please, that you, there we go, adopt the resolution which approves the stormwater management plan with the required revisions. Thank you, Lisa.
Okay. I guess it's the city's turn, right? Go ahead and fill us in on anything else that you feel we should be apprised of.
Thank you, Chairman Young, for the opportunity to
We're going to take a five-minute break. Okay, sorry about that.
No
problem.
5 minute
break. And then we'll.
Thank you.
Are you, Carl? Are you up there?